Chorizo Gate. We're talking about chorizo.
Okay. Welcome. Yes. Welcome back to the Space Quesera Show with the space nerds, Kavi Rose and Benjamin Salas. I just hit record right as we were discussing. We wanted to talk about hydrogen and yes, can you please fill us in with Chorizo Gate? This is this is quite a scandal.
Do you want to do it or should I?
No, you do it. Go for it.
Go ahead.
Chorizo Gate is a huge controversy sweeping the astrophysics and astronomy world right now. Now, whenever there's a new telescope releasing new data, new images, everyone goes wild. There's always, you know, a flurry of new papers come out. And with the James Webb Space Telescope, that was no exception. There were, you know, the incredible papers about the deepest objects we've ever seen, the furthest objects. I mean, a little bit of controversy there about, you know, how far are they actually? Some objects are, you know, supposedly only 100 million years after the Big Bang. That's how far out, you know, into the distant universe we're looking. But there were a couple of images, or one image in particular, that really got the world going. There was an astrophysicist who had shared an image, this kind of reddish circle pockmarked with some whites and some yellows, something that almost looked reminiscent of a red giant star, and had said, totally ironically, this is a new image from the James Webb Space Telescope, but in fact, it was a slice of salami. People lost their minds.
Which isn't new, by the way. I just wanted to say, I've seen this done so many times when there's like a full moon eclipse kind of thing and it's cloudy. A lot of people in astronomy will slap like a tortilla on a window and be like, oh, look at the full moon. Sure. So this isn't a new thing. But for some reason, this took off for kind of negative reasons.
Yeah. I think, yeah. People were just like...
It was innocently done as a joke. The scientist who did it admitted it right away. You know, it's a gag. But nobody cares. People said, you misled us, and here's meat, not a star. And, you know, then some of the extreme people were like, you know, science is a lie. And they ran with that stupid narrative. Like, oh, you're lying to us. And yeah, okay.
I woke up to a bunch of messages from people who were, you know, sharing stories from CNN, from other, like, you know, mainstream media sources with headlines like, you know, scientist apologizes for tricking the world. It's like,
no, he didn't.
It's a joke.
Oh my God.
I got it. Text messages. I got phone calls. I got emails. I got direct messages online from everybody who knows me. Benjamin's going to love this. Like, no, I don't. I get the joke. I thought it was funny, but people believe anything they see online.
I just think it's also just beautiful that it's like a sausage. I don't know. It's the food choice of that too, for some reason, makes it like that much more humorous to me. Sure. Because I don't know why, but it's like it's salted cured meat, and oh my God, science is a lie.
Science is a lie. Hashtag chorizo gate.
Chorizo Gate.
Go on.
No, sorry. I started getting these messages, and so I hopped onto Twitter to, you know, shout into the void, as one does, just to say, like, you know, people should be entitled to make jokes, and it's not their fault if you don't get them. Like, you can't get upset. And I went to do hashtag Chorizo Gate, just, you know, thinking, oh, that's a cute idea, because everything, you know, every conspiracy is everything gate these days. And it was already a thing. I feel like immediately people were just jumping on that.
Yeah. The internet is it's a fantastic place. It's also a terrible place. But it's also fantastic.
Living in the strangest timeline.
Yeah. We are. Well, maybe we can make an alternative one. Can you find us a black hole, Kavi, and we'll just figure out a way to get there, and we'll jump into a parallel timeline. I think that's the solution to the problem. Solved. Done. I'll
Photoshop some spaghetti actually spaghettifying into a black hole. That'd be fun. Yes. Go nuts.
I could probably, get some spaghetti and get like a Krispy Kreme donut with like the black bit in the middle, like on a black background, and just post that. Like, new black hole image from the Event Horizon Telescope.
We're going to be pumping out all our own memes and weird pictures, and sometimes someone's going to be like, I have no, what are they doing? Like, no context. Oh my God. Well, so, but stars, and you know, the picture is also kind of reminiscent of James Webb has been taking pictures of, you know, like, this is the farthest we've seen so far. And they are usually kind of reddish blobs. So this is the hydrogen episode. Can you tell us, like, what are the statistical odds that that blob, that light source, is even really there anymore? Like, is there a significant chance that light we're seeing is something that is now gone?
I mean,
if it's a red dwarf, I think it's still around because those have an insane life expectancy. But if it's any other kind of star, it's possible it's not there.
Yeah, I mean, the relevant background for our listeners would be that, you know, because the universe is so big and all the light that we see is limited in how fast it can move, right? The speed of light, this is a kind of universal speed limit. Things that are really, really far away, we're not actually seeing them as they are. We're seeing what it looked like when the light left. So, you know, when we look at the moon, we're seeing what the moon was like a second ago. We look at the sun, we're seeing what the sun looked like 8 minutes ago. And so, yeah, when we see these distant objects from James Webb, we're seeing objects as they were billions of years ago. And yeah, it's right. Like Benjamin was saying, most stars that are, you know, really massive and really bright enough for us to be able to see at, you know, great distances, those massive stars kind of, you know, live fast and die young over millions of years. And it's only the smaller ones that live for billions. So the chances are it's already gone.
It's already gone. Really? I remember reading that if you were looking at Earth from, I think, the next closest star to ours, you would be seeing the Egyptians building pyramids. That's what you would see through a telescope. If you had like a superpower telescope and you could look at Earth, that's what time distance traveled or something like that.
I think that would maybe be the next over galaxy Andromeda.
Maybe the next over galaxy. Okay.
Yeah. Because Alpha Centauri
is
like 4 light years away.
Okay. Right.
So.
But still, yeah, it's one of those things where you're like, wow, you know, the speed of light is so, it seems so fast, but when it's way out there, it's,
I mean, still. Yeah, that's probably a point you could go to that you would basically be able to look back on Earth if you had a good enough telescope and see the dinosaurs.
Right.
Like, they're, you know, I'm not good with prehistoric history. So what, dinosaurs are a few hundred million years ago in different periods, I know. But imagine if you had an alien civilization that was living 100 million light years away.
Right.
And they looked at us with a, you know, ideal telescope. They wouldn't see us. They wouldn't see, you know, people walking around, going to their jobs and all of the, you know, great modern civilized things that we have here. They'd see a bunch of giant feathery lizards walking around and say, damn, I do not want to go anywhere near there.
Yeah. That's probably why they haven't visited us yet. Unless, I don't know, there's, you know, unless you believe, but it's never aliens unless it's aliens.
Big props to calling dinosaurs feathery too, by the way. That's an important thing that we have.
We're very scientifically accurate here. We have to be. Yes, you guys are the space nerds, but we're more than just space. We're like science nerds. Cause I know you like rocks and minerals, and like I'm all about all the science. I was actually thinking a good way to wrap this up, because talking about light and distances and time and traveling, I really, really, really kept thinking to myself during the press release of James Webb, what Carl Sagan would have thought and what he would have said. And I also was a little bit upset that they used a quote, and I'm going to say a quote loosely of his at the very end of it, and it's actually not a quote that Carl Sagan ever said. So again, for the sake of accuracy, for science here, Carl Sagan actually did not ever say, somewhere something incredible is waiting to be known. He did not say that. He said something to the effect of that, but then it was another woman, an author, who kind of summarized and wrote that in a book about talking about Carl Sagan. So I was a little bit disappointed that that had happened. But what do you guys think? What do you think Carl would have thought about this? And what sort of like words would he have said about James Webb?
Well, I know when you said something that Carl Sagan never said, he actually never said billions and billions. I thought it's a lie. He said billions. He said millions, but he never said the famous quote.
He never said billions and billions.
No, but maybe James Webb, he would have broken it out, I'm sure. I'm like, okay, for this guy, I'll say billions and billions because there's no other way to describe how incredibly far away these things are that we're seeing. It's quite literally billions and billions tenfold. It's huge.
Yeah.
I think also, like, it's not just, you know, the billions of light years away. It's the billions of objects that we're seeing. I mean, that one wide field image that was shared that seemed to have all of these kind of skewed, blurry, different colored lines and dots. I mean, in that image, you saw some kind of like spiky things that were nearby stars that were just kind of like, you know, photobombing. But all of the other things in those image, which are billions of these different blurs and spots, are galaxies. Distant galaxies that each contain billions of stars and each contain billions of planets. Like, that to me is just mind-blowing.
It is. It's just so, so humbling. And, you know, for me, one of the most influential things that Carl wrote was obviously the pale blue dot and highlighting our very smallness and insignificance almost of our existence on this tiny point of light in all of this vastness. But he always had this way of kind of making you feel sort of hopeless, but then bringing back that hope and like full circling it. And I wish we would have had his thoughts and his words to, like, just what you're saying, look at these pictures and know that all of those little points of lights are galaxies, and how to, you know, bring the eloquence that he was so good at to bring it around and also be like, but isn't that amazing that, you know, we're here and we get to see this, and what does it mean? Maybe we will never know, but the fact that we can start looking and we can look out there and see that and be a part of this experience and to know ourselves as the universe knowing itself. I think that, you know, he would have had probably even a better, more eloquent way of saying it than I did, but, you know, something to that degree. I really wish he would have been there, but I just wanted to kind of think about what would Carl say? What would Carl think in this moment?
He'd be happy.
He would.
I was just going to say, I think he'd be so thrilled to see how many science communicators there are. Because keep in mind that when he was doing his thing, he was, like, in a lot of cases, just shunned by the scientific community. Because, you know, the scientific community was like, no, we do the research and then we write the papers. And when you get old, you write a textbook. That's pretty much it. This idea of, like, being a communicating scientist or somebody who is both, you know, knowledgeable on the topic and goes out and does public outreach and you know, does, you know, TV appearances and I guess all the online stuff that we have these days, that wasn't heard of. And I think that he would shed just like a single happy tear seeing that you have billions of science communicators out there all doing their own thing, you know, sharing in their own unique ways. And I think that maybe might be what he focuses on.
Oh, he'd be thrilled about that.
He would. Well, hopefully we can
talking about Carl science as a hobby.
Yeah. We're going to make Carl proud. This has been awesome. And one thing that we wanted to do is kind of give a look ahead at the end of each episode to give you, the listener, an idea of what to tune in for next week. And we definitely are going to be focusing heavily on the upcoming SLS Artemis launch, because that is just so exciting. And I also will be on my own Space Case Sarah channels, be interviewing Dr. Zabirkin again about probably SLS and stuff. So we will. I know.
So cool.
I know. So that's kind of where my head's going to be. And for you, the listener, to know where our head's going to be coming up. We will definitely, like I said, also have coming in the future giveaways, and we're going to get this live stream going. We just have so much that we just cannot wait to unroll for you, because without you, this wouldn't be a thing. So thank you to everyone who is listening right now. We appreciate your support so much. As a reminder, you can follow me, SpaceCaseSarah22, on social media. You can follow Kavi at Fun Fact Science on all the social media. And you can find Benjamin as either science actually or actually science, depending on who got to that label first on the social media. And you're listening to the Space Kaycera show here on iRock Space Radio. So if you guys want to choose a sign off, you could do something like, I don't know. Now this
that's something we need to come up for.
We need to figure that out.
It's a work in progress.
Yes. Space nerds. I don't know. Space nerds.
Space nerds assemble.
Anyway,
we need a gang sign or something that says space nerds.
Yeah. Just like pi. How do we do pi as a gang sign?
Yeah, pi. Oh.
All right, for now, we're signing out.